Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is Bob Spires, or should I say Dr. Bob Spires. Bob, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you're up to these days.
Hey, Mike. I am an associate professor up at the University of Richmond in the School of Professional and Continuing Studies. My main role is in a Master's of Teaching program. So training teachers, our biggest group is of teachers are folks with a bachelor's degree in one of the content areas that are looking to become a teacher and get their license and master's at the same time. I've been up here for about 6 years now, originally from Georgia. I lived in Athens and worked at Valdosta State University for 5 years. Before that, I taught public school for many years. So I'm a former middle school teacher, taught social studies and English, and absolutely love my time working with adolescents. You know, there's never a dull moment. No. In that job. So
So let's go back a little bit. I'm sure our paths crossed originally when you were a middle school teacher. You probably came to a Georgia Council workshop, but then I got to know you more in your next job. You mentioned Athens, Georgia and Valdosta, Georgia a second ago.
Yep.
For those people who don't know Georgia geography, could you explain how far apart that is and what your mileage was per year going back and forth?
It was a lot. About 4 hours one way. I lived in Athens, which is in the northeast corner of Georgia, not far from the mountains and North Carolina, South Carolina. Valdosta is at the dead center bottom of the state. It's the last exit, really, or last couple of exits before you enter Florida. So I spent 5 years doing a pretty long commute. Yeah. My wife worked in the schools in Athens. My kid was going to school there, and just decided I would do the long distance work, and so I would usually go down during the week and come back on the weekends.
There you go. Yeah, I was always amazed at that. I remember coming down to work with you at Valdosta, and I don't know, it was a Thursday, whatever it was, but you're like, oh, I get to go home today. And you told me what you're doing. I was like, oh my God, that's a drive.
Like anything, you get used to it. I'm a huge music fan and I listen to a lot of podcasts, honestly, and books on tape. So sometimes I was, at the end of a really good book and getting ready to pull in. And I'm like, oh man, I'm going to have to cut my audio book off. So.
Sit in the garage and let it finish.
That's right.
so when I came to Valdosta, it was not every semester, but many semesters I'd come down and you would have your pre-service teachers and I would work with them. And I always felt that those teachers were pre-service teachers were lucky to have you because you were teaching them right. And really kind of talking about the real things they were going to see in the classroom because you had just been in the classroom. Always like impressed with what you're doing in the classroom. And I could tell you had a great rapport with the students. Walking in, they were comfortable with you and they like being in your class. So thank you for having me down to Valdosta all those years.
It was great. Obviously I'd always worked with the Georgia Council. So when I came to Valdosta, it was great because the person that had been the Georgia Council rep was retiring. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll do it. Yeah. And so I began helping with, booking the stock market game and some of those other things. And then that was my first connection really with you and others in a more formal way. Got to go to some of the retreats and just what a great group of people around the whole state. So that was a blast. And then as you and I talked, I was like, well, we've got these pre-service teachers. I've got all social studies folks, middle and high school. And of course, econ is the one area they feel the weakest about. They are the most scared. I tried to tell them that econ is kind of the best kept secret in K-12 social studies.
Yes, it is.
But it really did make a difference when you came down and showed off some of the just really cool ideas that you guys had developed. I know for a fact, because my students would tell me that when you would walk away, they're their tensions would ease a little bit about, okay, I think I can teach some econ without, having a panic attack before my lesson, you know.
And that's half the battle. Just like having someone show you can do this. It's great. It's fun. It's interactive.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's cool. So Bob, I want to start by asking you if you could tell us, and you know, this could be any level of teaching. What do you think is the most rewarding part of being a teacher?
Well, I think, it's funny that most teachers that come into our programs that I've worked with all have a pretty good sense of what drives people to stay in the teaching profession. They always talk about making a difference. They always talk about seeing a light bulb go off with a kid. And so it might sound a little corny, but those are real true things that happen to teachers pretty regularly. You have, and sometimes they happen in real time. At the end of a class, you might have a kid that you've been struggling with, maybe with behavior or maybe with their academics. They might come up to you, or you might just have them say it in the middle of a lesson, like, "Oh, this is starting to make sense to me." So sometimes it happens in that real time kind of thing, right in the moment. And then other times it might take months or years. One of the strangest things I think that most teachers experience after being in the classroom for a few years, especially if you're in the same community, is having people come up to you in the grocery store at Target or Walmart, and they'll go, "Hey, I had you for social studies. I remember before I had your class, I hated social studies, but after having you, I realized, oh, this could actually be fun and interesting." So sometimes it's in the moment, sometimes it's down the road sometime, but it really does, sort of recharge your battery when it happens.
Oh, definitely. And I've had several teachers tell me a version of that. I was at Target 3 weeks ago and I turned the corner and, "Hey, Mr. Raymer. Hey." And it's usually like, "Hey, do you remember me?" "Of course, yes."
Yeah, of course.
And I agree 1,000%. It's cool to see how they've grown over the years. Like they're different people, and then knowing that you taught them something, that's always kind of a cool kick to get.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah, you have
100%.
this like place in their trajectory of life. You're a mile marker or something. You're there that they can always look back on. I mean, although I'm not in the K-12 world, I get to kind of see it by proxy now that my students, when they go on and they're successful in their classrooms, they come back and tell me those exact same stories.
Nice.
Even a couple of years after coming here, I had two students send me letters that their students wrote to them. And just the most amazing little letters. You're my favorite teacher. You went above and beyond for us. I know I was a handful in your classroom, those kinds of things that only kids can say. But it's great to see it when our teacher slash students get to experience it too.
So you mentioned you're working now with mostly master's students.
Yeah.
What's that like? Like I've never like worked with master students, right? I mean, I
Well,
said
it's
some older than you.
oh yeah, absolutely. We, our students, non-traditional students, come from all walks of life. We had a master's program at Valdosta State too that was very similar. So at Valdosta, we had, we were close to a military station. So we would occasionally have people like from the GI Bill that would decide after they retired from the Air Force, they want to, go into teaching. So we had people from all walks of life there too. And then here in Virginia, it's kind of the same. We'll have folks that are coming right out of their bachelor's program. It's interesting that we'll have people, they went to their bachelor's program in history or mathematics or English or something. And it's interesting to hear the same story come from them, is that often families, parents, community members told them not to go into teaching, and so it's a pretty common trope, I guess, that we'll have folks that say, I've kind of always wanted to be a teacher, but people would always tell me not to do it. And then, I was the kid that, played teacher at home. I would make my little brother sit there and do lessons with me and these kinds of things. And so it's interesting to see folks that, they get to the end of their bachelor's program and say, "You know what? I think I want to do this." Or they worked in another career. I've had folks that have come from law. I've had folks that come from medicine. I've had MDs, I've had JDs, and they worked out in really intense environments that they didn't really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go substitute teach one day and they'll go, wait,
yes.
I can make a difference in these kids' lives, and they need it. They need positive adults in their life.
Yeah. You mentioned
We get a
that.
nice mixed bag of that.
Yeah. So you mentioned a second ago, like people telling these folks not to be teachers, like that really worries me, because I think that message is getting louder and louder.
It is.
I keep thinking, like, who's going to be a teacher 20 years from now, 30 years from now? So it's great that we have people like you that are they're positive and helping these folks sort of find their passion and find their place in a classroom, because it is
Yeah,
such
I
a
mean,
great, cool experience.
yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a rewarding career for me. There are some of the same tropes that get tossed around, and oftentimes they're kind of stuck in people's imagination, but they aren't exactly that real. And so I'll ask people, like, so you've heard this story, but do you know anybody that that's happened to? Do you know anybody that got fired because of their standardized test grades?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, I've been doing this for a long time. I've yet to meet someone
Yeah.
that got fired because of their test grades. They might have been fired for something else. So sometimes these stories, these myths kind of take hold. And I think they are, they warrant us pushing back pretty hard on them.
Yes, that's one of the missions of the Teach and Tell podcast, to sort of
Yes.
get positive stories out there about teaching. How about a single favorite teaching memory, if you can nail down one thing?
Oh man, I have a lot. I get to luckily get to see some positive teaching moments, even working with master's students, because teaching isn't really something that you just get to do and say, I'm really good at it my first year, so I can rest on my laurels.
I agree.
I had a class that didn't start until 7 o'clock at night this semester. And so you can imagine a bunch of adults coming in at 7 o'clock. Their minds aren't exactly there. Their energy levels aren't very high. And so I had taught the class at earlier times before, but I said, I'm going to put my teacher hat on and I'm going to totally redesign, this class. I'm going to make it more interactive. I'm going to put, put the work on the students more than on myself, which is what, young teachers often don't do. And I saw a real turnaround. And so just this semester, I've seen that when a teacher, when myself, thinks really critically about your own practice, what's working and what's not, and then just puts in some intentional effort to make a change based on what your students need, it usually pays off.
Yes.
So I've had it just this semester with adults. You know this from teaching K-12. There probably wasn't a day that didn't go by that I didn't have a wild story to tell my wife about what had happened that day in the classroom. So, from the really great experiences where a light bulb went off, I had a kid that goes, I didn't even know that was a thing. Yep, that's why we're talking about it. And then their minds just kind of open. And then when they write about it or they talk about it, they are more informed. But also just the wild stuff that adolescents do and say. Sometimes it's, you often don't necessarily need Comedy Central if you're a teacher of adolescents, because you're going to get so much hilarious entertainment that goes on a daily basis that it will just keep you cracking up all the time.
Yeah, some kids are just funny people all the time, whereas other kids just occasionally say something that's absolutely hilarious. And it's, again, you go home and you're like, that was a good day. That kid made me laugh. Can't beat that.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I try to impress this on our teachers as well, as, you're going to have stressful days, and good luck finding a job that doesn't have stressful days. But if you keep a sense of humor about it, these are kids, right?
Yes.
You're working with kids. They've got a lot to learn. That's kind of what makes them kids. And if you keep a lighthearted attitude about it, it can actually be really enjoyable. Because they will come up with ideas that you couldn't even fathom.
No.
And that's what makes it so cool,
Yes. And I found that the folks who don't have the sense of humor and can't let things slide, they're the ones who struggle. Like, you can't be
Yes.
a stern taskmaster and survive with 150 kids.
No, and
No.
And you know, I think often people get into that mindset of sort of the worker monkey, you know, that's what your job as a teacher is to just, you know, teach the test kind of. I don't find that mentality is rewarding for anybody, the
No.
students especially.
Yeah, most of
But
all
then the
students.
teachers ought to enjoy their job,
Yeah,
you know.
definitely. How about a challenge or two? Like, what do you, again, back maybe when you were in the classroom K-12 or now, like, what are some challenges or a challenge that you as an educator kind of come up against, and how do you fix it? Or how do you
Well,
get around it?
I think everyone that goes into K-12 teaching is nervous about classroom management, and I'm no different than anybody else. I've had my classroom management challenges. I had fights break out in class. You know, I'd break up a fight here and there. But I also found a lot of those challenging moments were times where you really got to do the kind of teaching that's not on the test. You know, real life lesson kinds of things, one-on-one with a kid in the hall who's like losing it, you know, and is upset and lost all their composure. Maybe they don't have a ton of great examples for, like, you know, emotional control at home or wherever among their friend group. And so it's a chance for you to model that for kids. And guess what? It's not going to be on the test results. It's not going to be on your observation necessarily from the principal, but it's going to make a huge difference in this human being's life, you know, that you were there when they had this moment where some kid said something to them, they lost it and they, you know, wanted to get violent. And you were there to not just break up a fight, but to talk them through, like, why, you know, this is not going to be the last time you get upset. But if you can't figure out how to regulate your emotions, man, life's going to be much more challenging.
Yeah. This made me think, like, how many other professions where you need a 4-year college degree, is there a chance you might break up a fight every day in that profession other than the boxing referee or something?
Yeah.
There aren't many.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting, you know, I don't necessarily recommend everybody jump in and try to break up
Oh,
a
no.
student fight.
No.
But you know, those moments where I often kind of found that a lot of our student teachers were really nervous about, you know, oh, anything's going to go wrong. A kid's going to, you know, be upset in the class. I'm like, no, you should just expect that. Like,
Yeah.
go into it, you know, not being shocked that kids are acting like kids.
Yeah.
Right. Instead, be ready for it. Like, yeah, I'm open to whatever and I'll deal with it in the moment. You can't sit around and plan every aspect of teaching.
And that is so much learning on the job. Like you mentioned your first year of teaching. Yeah. I mean, compared to your 5th year, 6th year, it's just every day you're learning and learning and learning. And it just, you get so much better. Like as you do it, get the reps in, just managing kids.
Yeah. And I would say that mirrors the challenges that I have at the higher ed level. It's just dealing with just the negativity toward our profession out there in politics, in the community. You know, it's like that. There was that KDP or that Kappen article a few years back that Americans, for the most part, rate their community school really highly and rate the rest of the public schools poorly. Why is that? Well, they only know about their local school, and they generally feel good about it. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be challenges. But then everything else, they're being fed the message about everybody else, without having a lot of firsthand experience. So that's our biggest challenge, I think, in training teachers is getting them to just ignore the noise that's out there.
To that, I say amen. So keep doing that. You may have an answer off the top of your head, or you might have to think about this one a little bit. When it's all said and done, imagine you're down to the last day of teaching. And again, you could go back in time. So you're like, I'm still a middle school teacher. What's the one go-to lesson you'd want to have be your last lesson ever, if you had to pick one?
Well, you probably remember this, the lessons after standardized test season
Yes, which is
were
right
my
now,
favorite.
by the way.
So it was always that, you know, crunch time, you get the standardized test, but then you always have like several weeks at the end of school left. You've taught all of the curriculum And so now you have kind of that choice of like, can I get them prepped for the next year? You know, what the next course is, or do a little bit more enrichment kind of stuff over what we've already done. And I remember just taking a couple of days. I was teaching on, American history, and we just took a couple of days to do American music. And, I'm a music fan. And so we went all the way back to the start of the United States, and they got to listen. We'd listened to little clips of music through each of the periods of time that we had studied. And kids were just blown away. I mean, you have those like informal, fun moments where, they get to hear some like early jazz or something that just is not what they're used to. And there's a lot of giggling and they think it's silly and funny. Those were probably some of my best moments. And then maybe in terms of just experiences teaching, we're taking kids on field trips. If I could pick, it would be my last day of teaching would be taking kids on a field trip.
Where would you go?
We used to always take middle schoolers to the 4-H camp Rock Eagle.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun because you would do a lot of those team building activities, outdoor ed kinds of things. The teachers would take bets on which kid was going to fall in the mud first. There was always at least one kid who just, had to fall out, get out there in the mud and fall. That was always just this chance for you to get to know them as human beings. And it, to me, those moments were ones where, when you got back to the classroom, you had great stories, where you could say, hey, remember that time, you were on in that canoe? Well, think about this. We're thinking about, Native Americans in the US. And those were similar boats that they were traveling up and down the rivers. What does that mean for trade? And what does that mean for culture? And so, those real life experiences, anytime you can get that and bring it into the classroom, I always found my lessons just came alive.
Yes, I think I wish when I'm in charge, field trips are going to be mandatory. Like you have to go somewhere with the kids all the time. And they're, it's difficult because you got to paperwork and buses and all this stuff. But man,
course, of
the
course.
payoff, always great. Always, always, always. And
And it
then,
doesn't have to be something fancy, right? You don't have to
no.
go to DC to the Smithsonian. I mean, there's a million places locally that
Yeah.
schools can take folks to. And I think we're now that we're out of the pandemic, people are realizing just how important just getting out in the community is.
Go see everything. And then you mentioned you'd bet on which kid would fall in the mud. Just an aside, I remember never betting for money, but just always having fun. Like, which student's going to get in trouble on spring break and
Oh yeah.
just all that kind of stuff. Another little benefit of teaching, those fun things you
Oh, absolutely. It was all in good fun. It certainly
teach.
wasn't to mock anybody,
Yes,
but they would have
condone you.
probably, yeah, they would have probably agreed with us, to be honest.
Yes, 100%. All right. Next question, Bob. How about a strategy, a resource, an article, anything, research that you can kind of mention that would you think would help? I mean, this is right in your wheelhouse. You would help like a future teacher, someone that's going through teacher training right now. What's something they should know about?
Well, I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole of emotional labor, and thinking about, how much of teaching, is intellectual, but also part of it is emotional, right? And you do have to have some emotional objectivity as a teacher. In other words, not taking children's behavior personally, recognizing if it's problematic that it needs to be addressed, but not seeing it as a, disrespect towards you as a professional. It's really just a kid being a human being, and so I think it's important. I think you'll probably over the next 10 years see more active work in teacher training, getting people to think about emotional labor as a thing that, you do put on kind of a persona when you're in the classroom, and that's okay, right? Sometimes you have a bad day and you don't necessarily want to bring that into the classroom, but recognize it, try to depersonalize some of those things that get you really, really upset, especially kids' behavior. And just recognize that that's work too, and that takes a toll on you. So be mindful of it.
And it takes a toll, and there's not often like a place to go with your feelings as an educator. Because again, the bell rings, the door closes, you're on an island.
Exactly.
Who do you
Yeah,
talk to?
I'm always kind of careful with, like, the whole sort of self-help, self-care mantra, which is, hey, I know your job's tough. Go take care of it yourself.
Yeah, that's not
I
helpful.
would like to see more systems and leadership doing more active teacher care.
Yeah.
And I don't think it has to be a lot. I don't think you need to send everybody on a cruise or anything. But having some things, I'm thinking, I got lucky at my last school. We had a really good PTA, and they brought in a massage therapist, and you could get 15-minute appointments.
Nice.
And while a 15-minute massage is not gonna, totally change your entire worldview, it certainly doesn't hurt.
No. I mean, I'm sure it made you feel like someone cared about you, right?
Exactly. And
Yeah.
so essentially, it's sort of what goes around comes around, right? What's good for students is also good for teachers. Students want to know that they're being cared for, that the teacher's paying attention. Maybe they're even changing things based on how students are doing. And then the same goes for teachers. They want to know that the principals and superintendents are paying attention. They're treating them as professionals, but they're also recognizing that it's a challenging job and, giving them little perks here and there. It
Yeah.
does not have to be something that costs millions of dollars either. A little nod and thumbs up really does make a huge difference, at least in my perspective.
Yeah. One of my favorite things, and it's such an easy thing for people to do, is let's say, school ends at 3:20. We had to be on the clock till 4 o'clock on Friday. Hey, teachers, should you head on out of here 20 minutes
Head on
early?
out.
Like,
Yeah.
that's like, yes. Did you like win the lottery when you get that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, yes.
Yeah. And, I remember I worked with a couple of principals that were like, I'm leaving at 3, so who, I will not be around. They would kind of insinuate, and we all like a little nod like that.
Sure.
Because guess what? We're going to be doing the planning anyway, whether
Yeah.
we're doing it at our house or in our classroom till 4. So it's just a little perk.
Yeah, I remember one post planning, it was May in Georgia, so it's really hot already. And the principal came on the announcements half hour early saying, "Hey, we just got a weather report. There's a blizzard coming in. You might want to head out." And I'm like, "Yes, I'm here for that. Definitely."
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot, but it does take a little intentionality behind it.
Definitely.
I worked at a school that the PTA did like a potluck and would watch. We had lunch duty, so I bet you didn't do that in high school, but
Yeah.
parents, yeah, okay. Well, the parents would watch the classes while you would go and eat at the potluck. I mean, you had the same amount of time for lunch. It was a 25-minute lunch, but it was just a one-off kind of thing. It would happen about once every semester, and we were stoked.
Yeah, cafeteria duty. That's a rough one. That's a rough
Yeah.
go. All right, Bob. One final question before we go out
Yes.
and leave here. When Hollywood comes to make the movie about Bob Spire's Educator, who's going to play you and the big screen version of your superb teaching career?
Well, I'd probably go with Chris Farley, just a big old goof. unfortunately, he's not with us anymore,
Oh.
but one of those kind of comedians, because I like to think that some of the most fun teaching experiences had a lot of laughs and a little self-deprecating humor. I can remember, standing at the front of a classroom. And you can just get a sense, when some little vibe goes across the room and
Yes.
everybody's kind of giggling and laughing, and you're looking, you're going, what is it? What's going on? I'm talking about the Reformation. That's not very funny.
Not funny
And
at
then
all.
they point down, and I realize my zipper's open and I'm standing in front of the class. So I'm,
Yeah.
quickly zip my pants up, whoops, sorry.
Yeah.
But those would be the moments I would want in the class, because it is fun. It is funny. You have to have a sense of humor, but it really is a meaningful career.
Yeah. I'm thinking now, imagine you're a student and Chris Farley really is your teacher.
How awesome would that be, right?
You would have learned much, but my God, it'd be
Yeah,
great.
that's true.
Oh boy, I do miss that guy. It's so funny. And to follow up on your fly down zipper, that same exact thing happened to me during student teaching. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't take yourself too seriously. You could take the job seriously, but don't take yourself seriously.
No, because the kids certainly won't. All right. Dr. Bob Spires, I can't thank you enough again for joining us today and for being an awesome educator. All the students coming through Richmond now are fortunate to have you. And I hope to see you again down the road. Maybe in some next time I'm in DC, we'll split the difference. Jeez. Meet halfway, whatever that is.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to have you. It's been too long since I've hung out with you. So let's not make it that long again.
Deal. All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.